Welcome to episode 90 of The Lab. I'm your host, Brad Barton. The attempts to use simulated evolution to solve problems fall into four main approaches. Evolutionary programming, evolutionary strategy, genetic algorithms, and genetic programming. Of those four, the first three came out in the 1960s. The fourth one, genetic programming, came out in the early 1990s. Of the four, only evolutionary programming was an attempt to create artificial intelligence directly. Conceived by Lawrence J. Fogel, I would explain it, but it involves technical things like finite state automata and Markov chains. In addition, it eventually became nearly indistinguishable from an evolutionary strategy. The evolutionary strategy is a bit more accessible. In 1963, a couple of students met at the Technical University of Berlin, Engel Rechenberg and Hans-Paul Scheffel. They were doing experiments in a wind tunnel, trying to find out the best flow of air over various surfaces, doing things like trying to find the best trade-off between lift and drag for a wing surface. This was a laborious process. It had more to do with the experimenter's intuition and trial and error than any sort of formula you could plug the variables into and get a decent answer out of. There wasn't any such formula available. Engel Rechenberg and Hans-Paul Scheffel wondered if they could find some sort of systematic approach. They started trying to change some of the variables by small steps at a time to see if they could find improvements. However, changing one of the many variables involved would cause changes that were too difficult to quantify. They couldn't wrap numbers around the results. Sometimes they couldn't even tell if there was a difference. Engel Rechenberg hit on the idea of changing many of the variables at once and seeing if they could use something like evolution in order to close in on the best solution. They took a vector, a list of numbers, and then would mutate that vector and create a child vector. If the resulting child performed better than the parent, it would replace the parent, and they would continue the experiments. In this early approach, they were dealing with only two individuals at a time. They found that the best results seemed to happen when one out of five of the mutated offspring did as well or better than the parent. They had set it up so that small changes were more likely than large ones. For the mathematically minded, they were using a normal distribution with a given variance. If they were getting mutated children that were doing better so that there were more than one-fifth doing better than the parent, they would increase the possible size of the mutations, increase the variance. If they were getting fewer than one-fifth of the children doing better than the parent or as well as the parent, they would decrease the variance so that smaller mutations would take place. It worked. They managed to use simulated evolution to solve a problem that they couldn't quite understand. As the years went by, they made various modifications to this algorithm. They eventually had larger populations and started to implement sexual reproduction. The best fit individuals would have their variables combined at random in order to produce offspring. They also discovered, contrary to their first approach, that in order to improve over time, it was necessary to allow some deterioration in performance from one generation to the next. Airflow over a surface, especially at high speeds, is a turbulent system, or a chaotic one, one wherein small changes can make very large differences, and predicting what change will make how large a difference is difficult to impossible. These are the kinds of problems that various simulated evolution strategies do best on. They actually perform rather poorly on simple problems. Imagine, on a graph, a squiggly line, like looking at the horizon of distant mountains. The best possible solution is all the way down at the bottom. That squiggly line has a lot of places that are lower than the very top, but do not reach the bottom. These are called local minimums, or local optimums. Evolutionary approaches do best when there are a lot of local minimum. Simple problems, when graphed out, basically have a flat line on either side and one narrow area that dips down to the bottom immediately. Those are difficult to find through this kind of approach. You pretty much have to hit on it randomly. If the problem space can be represented with a nice squiggly line, then evolutionary approaches will produce children that can find pieces of the best answer. Then, when they are mutated and or combined, they can eventually, after stepping their way down, bit by bit, generation after generation, find the best solution. Though there are random factors involved in evolutionary approaches, the results are not random. They find the best possible solution within much less time than pure random guessing. In evolutionary approaches, including evolutionary strategies, the survival rate of the offspring affects how well they find the best possible solution. If most of the least fit individuals die, it can cause the overall system to end up in one of those local minimum and never reach the best solution. If the selection is too forgiving, if too many survive, they'll never converge on a solution at all. There is a serious dearth of general audience information available. I have links to the relevant sections of The Hitchhiker's Guide to Evolutionary Computation on the show page, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. Both evolutionary programming and an evolutionary strategy use direct representations of the problem. They mutate and recombine actual numbers. By contrast, genetic algorithms use a different representation of the problem, rather than directly working on the numbers. But we'll talk about that next time.